May 3rd. This morning Theodore sent me a word that he was ill and unable to get up, upon which I immediately went to see him. He had caught cold, was sick and a little feverish. I urged him to make no attempt to leave his room, and assured him that I would do what I could to reconcile Mr. Sloane to his absence. This I found an easy matter. I read to him a couple of hours, wrote 4 letters, 1 in French, and then talked for a while, a good while. I have done more talking, by the way, in the last fortnight than in any previous 12 months, much of it, too, none of it the wisest, nor, I may add, of the most superstitiously veracious. In a little discussion 2 or 3 days ago with Theodore, I came to the point and let him know that in gossiping with Mr. Sloane I made no scruple for our common satisfaction of colouring, more or less. My confession gave him that turn, as Mrs. Gamp would say, that his present illness may be the result of it. Nevertheless, poor dear fellow, I trust he will be on his legs tomorrow. This afternoon, somehow, I found myself really in the humour of talking. There was something propitious in the circumstances. A hard, cold rain without, a wood fire in the library, the bonhomme puffing cigarettes in his armchair, beside him a portfolio of newly imported prints and photographs, and Theodore tucked safely away in bed. Finally, when I brought our tête-à-tête to a close, taking good care not to overstay my welcome, Mr. Sloane seized me by both hands and honoured me with one of his venerable grins. "Max," he said, "you must let me call you Max. You are the most delightful man I ever knew." Verily, there is some virtue left in me yet. I believe I almost blushed.
Page 15.
"Why didn't I know you 10 years ago?" the old man went on. "There are 10 years lost."
10 years ago I was not worth your knowing," Max remarked.
"But I did know you," cried the bonhomme. "I knew you in knowing your mother."
"Ah, my mother again. When the old man begins that chapter, I feel like telling him how to blow out his candle and go to bed."
"At all events," he continued, "we must make the most of the 10 years that remain. I'm a rotten old carcass, and I have no intention of dying. You won't get tired of me and want to go away?"
"I am devoted to you, sir," I said, "but I must be looking for some occupation, you know."
"Occupation? Bother, I'll give you occupation. I'll give you wages."
"I'm afraid that you will want to give me the wages without the work." And then I declared that I must go up and look at poor Theodore. The bonhomme still kept my hands.
"I wish very much that I could get you to be as fond of me as you are of poor Theodore."
"Ah, don't talk about fondness, Mr. Sloane. I don't deal much in that article."
"Don't you like my secretary?"
"Not as he deserves."
"Nor as he likes you, perhaps?"
"He likes me more than I deserve."
"Well, Max," my host pursued, "we can be good friends all the same. We don't need a hocus-pocus of false sentiment. We are men, aren't we? Men of sublime good sense."
And just here, as the old man looked at me, the pressure of his hands deepened to a convulsive grasp, and the bloodless mask of his countenance was suddenly distorted by a nameless fear.
"Oh, my dear young man," he cried, "come and be a son to me, the son of my age and desolation. For God's sake, don't leave me to pine and die alone."
I was greatly surprised, and I may add, I was moved. Is it true, then, that this dilapidated organism contains such measureless depth of horror and longing? He has evidently a mortal fear of death. I assured him, on my honour, that he may henceforth call me for any service.
Page 16.